RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
As a cardiologist and a chef, Dr. Michael Fenster has combined his culinary talents with cutting-edge medical expertise and insight. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Welcome to Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and it is time once again to perform a little culinary CPR with yours truly and my very special guest, the incomparable Chef Luca Paris. Chef Luca is a restaurant extraordinaire located up in Keene, New Hampshire. Got to check out Luca's Mediterranean Grill if you are ever up that way. You've also been on Food Network, where he practically owns the entire screen. And unlike a lot of the folks there, this guy can actually cook, let me tell you. Today, though, you're in for a treat because we've got a little something we could say is just what the doctors ordered. So I'm going to share with you a recipe that I recently prepared for my appearance on the Doctor's Television Show, crab and asparagus pasta with white wine and lemon caper sauce. And I'm going to get, I may actually be schooled here a little bit from our Italian food expert, Chef Paris. So Luca, welcome to the show. Hey, I'm ready to have my recipe either kicked up a notch or me taking down a few. So
It already sounds phenomenal. And every time you introduce me, I'm like, I want to watch this guy. And then I look in the mirror, I was like, that can't be the same person. Hey, you know what? I love that you're doing pasta. And I've always wanted to talk to you, Mike, about, you know, just your take on pasta. And then we talk about different meats and what's good for you. What I love about the way you approach food from a doctor's perspective and a health perspective is that you find what about the food is right. Because you know what? Pasta predates everything we've ever heard about obesity and this world that we're living in right now.
You're right.
And then why is it so vilified right now? And the fact that you're taking it and making it a recipe on a show like The Doctors, on this show, I was afraid to give you a pasta recipe to work with. And I'm so psyched you did this. And I love the idea that we're going to talk pasta today.
Yeah, and pasta is one of my favorite things. And again, you know, you and I have chatted a number of times, you know, on the fact that, you know, it's all about kind of where the food comes from, you know, and as a chef, it's second nature for you to source the food, to get that traditional, you know, original food, you know, based on kind of the history of it, where it comes from. And, you know, you were born in Italy, and so you know pasta, and which is why I was a little, you know, had a little bit of trepidation about sharing this with you. I was like, oh my God, you know, he's going to say, wow, you really killed the pasta dish here. You shouldn't have done this or that. So I'm glad we have a sort of a common ground. And I think one of the reasons pasta is vilified, and I'm going to share a story with you because this actually has to do with another doctor. So I was teaching a course, Culinary RX. We had chefs and physicians and other health professionals together. And I was talking with the doctor, and she was telling me, well, I've gluten intolerance, or I'm gluten enteropathy. I can't eat gluten in the United States. She said, but you know, an interesting thing, and I interjected with her. I said, well, you know, it's probably because the pasta you're eating here in the States is made with modern bread wheat, and that's genetically very different than what you'll get in Italy, which passed a pasta purity law in 1967, saying that pasta made, at least now for export in Italy, can only be made by durum wheat as it was historically, which is what I consider an ancient grain. It's a genetic precursor to modern bread wheat. And she said, well, funny you should mention that, because I was in Italy, and of course I had to try the pasta. And she said, I was there for a month, went all over Italy, ate pasta every meal. I felt fine. I lost weight. I had energy. I was great. I came back. I was so excited that I could eat pasta. She said, I had a meal in the United States, and I was sick for 2 days.
Difference
in the ingredients.
And that's exactly what you have to focus on, is that semolina, or the wheat that's made from the durum flour, the durum, is just perfect for you when you're talking about a healthy alternative to what we're used to. And I find that here happening too. I'll buy only imported pastas to use in the restaurant if it's made in the United States. Even if it's a company I know, I tend to just see if I can find an imported version. And it really makes a difference. And we could even get into cooking pasta all the way through versus cooking it al dente. Al dente wasn't only just because you wanted this texture to it, but the more you don't break it down as much, it's more complex, as you chew, that whole process of eating, you don't need as much. I mean, it just makes all the difference in the world. If you eat pasta the way it was intended to be eaten back in the old days in Italy, and even now with the grandmothers, you will find you could eat pasta on a regular basis and still maintain the physique, still maintain your level of health, and it's not bad for you. And that's why I get scared every time I hear someone say, I got to take pasta out of my diet. I go, oh, no, we just got to change how you enjoy your pasta, not take it out.
Well, that's exactly right. And what's so funny about that is we talk about the Mediterranean diet, and we talk about a lot, you know, you and I from a culinary perspective, because it's so delicious. But I can also talk about it, you know, from a medical perspective. In my opinion, and I think the data supports this, it's probably the most rigorously tested cuisine and diet. A lot of this work being done with the PREDIMED group out of Spain, but they incorporate the Mediterranean diet, and it's, you know, what's in Italy? It's pasta. And if you go there, you see the people are healthy. They don't have this American physique with, you know, the big belly and so on and so forth. And they're eating, you know, the pasta, you know, all the time, you know, at every meal, as you said, but it's not the pasta you get in the United States. And I think, again, to give our listeners some take home points, it's very simple to source this pasta. You can make it yourself, as you said, you know, sure, from Durum, or you can use Anka or Kamut, which is, of course, on another ancient grain. Wow. Or, as Chef said, buy it and make sure it's imported from Italy. And if it says imported from Italy, it must, by law, be made with Durum wheat, which is the type of wheat, and semolina is the grind.
One of the things you mentioned, and I can't wait to hear the recipe because of this, is, you know, the thing that we tend to forget as an American population, it's not the pasta that was bad for us. It's usually what we've put with everything else on it. It's always been this fatty, heavy cream sauce, and it's always been this heavy stuff. And it's when you do that, you overcook your pasta, then you put this fatty cream sauce on it, and then you have that every day, and that's what you're used to at these.
Luca, are you telling me if I go to Italy, it's not going to be like Olive Garden? I mean, you're shattering my world here.
My
worldview is cracked.
I don't think Olive Garden is ever going to call me up for any endorsements. But you know what? There's a balance in everything, and you know, you have the acid, and you have the fish, and you have this. When you taste the pasta in Italy, you taste the pasta, you taste the ingredients, and it's a melding of flavors. It's not this big goop on top of this, and the pasta is just a vehicle to put that in your mouth. That's what it's never supposed to be. That's why going there,
right,
or having it
done not,
correctly.
It's not tomato soup with, you know, some noodles in it.
Exactly.
and
it's important. It's important that, and we can get into. We could spend 2 days on the different cuts and how they affect the sauce and this and why. Why you get a straight cut or a long cut versus a tube cut or this or that, or, you know, the gemellini versus where they're working on. But those are really important. And one day you and I could probably spend a whole couple of hours just talking about the importance of the different cuts of pasta, too.
And let me get your recommendation there. So you see the dish, and let me run through it real quick so folks know basically what it is. It's just going to have some crab, some fresh asparagus, some garlic shallots, some herbs, white wine, capers, lime juice zest. We're going to fold in a little bit of sheep's pecorino cheese at the end. Mm. And so, you know, it's going to be very light. And basically, you know, when we're flavoring, we've got a very light sauce. We're going to add some really high quality. This is where you're going to pay the extra money for that really good first press, cold press, virgin, extra virgin olive oil. And so what kind of pasta noodle, because I just put out, sometimes it could be hard to find, you know, a real imported Italian, depending where you are, or certainly some of the other ancient grains. So I was thinking, my recommendation was get what you can get. But if you have your choice, so you have a wonderful market. You're at Luca's Mediterranean Cafe Market, and so I've got my choice of these great pastas. What kind of cut would you recommend for this dish?
Well, whenever I'm thinking about seafood sauces or anything that has seafood, so automatically I start going to the long cuts, whether a linguine, a fettuccine, or something like that. You can make it fresh. That's great. But some people, you know, they like – I love dry pasta. So Del Verde, Divella, Barilla, all these companies. Now, Barilla does a lot of American stuff, too, so then you have to make sure you know where you're getting it from. But if you're keeping up in touch, and I believe Barilla even does the Italian version here in the States. But there's look at the ingredients. But any of these Italian brands of dry pasta are actually phenomenal when you get them. So I like the longer cuts for this. I don't generally do the tube cuts for that. I don't know what you had done. Did you do a tube cut or a longer cut?
I did a long cut because one of the things I love, particularly when I use crab, is the crab, when it's really good, kind of fresh crab meat, it flakes. And,
exactly.
The way it flakes with the oil, it tends to just cling to these, you know, long strands of pasta. And so you're just getting, you get the big chunks of crab, but then you're also just getting these, bites and hints of crab where maybe you're getting a little bit more herb note and a little bit more of that olive and lemon flavor in one bite, a little bit more of seafood in another bite. So every bite is kind of like this, it's like this mermaid kiss from the deep surprise of, herbs and seafood. And it's just becomes a dining experience.
Buddy, I got to tell you, there is a good chance I'm stealing this for the restaurant this week. I'm letting you know that right now.
I would actually be honored.
I'm going to steal the idea. I'm running it as a pasta recommendation, and I already got the feel of it. I'm thinking about, when you talk about it, and hopefully people see that in their heads too, but this is how I'm actually twirling my fork and I'm picking up all the pieces, and it's kind of intermingling with the pasta and then the crab and then the herbs. And I'm just like, this is it. This is what I want to put in my mouth. And I want to talk real quick. And I love your idea about the pecorino in there. There's this kind of old world rule when it comes to pasta or seafood and fish. I'm sorry, seafood and cheese. So you can't really use it. I would say I love that you have it on there. I like, you need to do a pecorino cheese. That's the most important thing. Something that has a little bit of a bite to it that doesn't overpower. The Parmigianos, if you go in that direction, they're nutty. It just doesn't work perfectly with a fish. The only other cheese I would use on there that I really love is the ricotta salata. I don't know if you've used that much, but a dry ricotta. It's a nice grating cheese. Again, has the same little bite that you get in the pecorino. Absolutely beautiful cheese. Cheese in there is absolutely perfect, man.
And one thing, folks, as we do the recipe, and it's very, very straightforward. What we're going to do is just, I'm actually going to parboil, particularly if I've got the asparagus that I'm using is sort of the regular cut asparagus. Is a little bit thicker because then everything will cook at the same time. Once you've got it in the pan, so we're going to parboil that. We could cook our pasta, take that out, and then we're just going to go ahead and kind of make the sauce, add everything back in and kind of heat it. And when we add that cheese, don't season it until you add the cheese because these cheeses have some salt in them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you bring in that flavor. And what's important is adding the cheese last. And you talked about, I think I was getting excited again thinking about the flavors. You talked about mixing in the sauce with the pasta, right? That's an important part of it. That, to me, that is really important. You don't just pour sauce on top of pasta and serve it. It's mixing it in, getting the pasta into the sauce, letting it coat. That is where it really comes together and gets exciting, and all those flavors and smells come. And the pasta soaks up some of that. This is a home run, man. I'm doing it. It's done.
Absolutely. And folks, and you brought this up, so I want to, mention it. You talked about, and I've heard this before too, with seafood and fish, cheese, no cheese. And it's very interesting because for my book that's coming out this summer, Ancient Eats, Volume 1, we sort of covered the Mediterranean cuisine because we did ancient Greece. And don't worry, Luca, I've got in the upcoming volumes, we're going to do Italy. There's going to be one on Rome.
I hope so.
But it's really its own book. And I'm going to get you your expertise on that. But this is what we did, ancient Greece and the Vikings. And so even back in the times of ancient Greece, so we're talking classical Greece, probably about 2,500 years ago, looking at different chefs, there's this big war going on as to whether you put cheese in with fish or not. So believe it or not, this discussion, this disagreement has been going on for over 2,500 years about hey, because some people were saying, hey, you would read this manuscript. So-and-so is really a crummy chef. Look at what they did. They put this cheese in with this fish, and they totally ruined it. And the other, this other recipe is like, oh, you know, if you don't put a little bit of finely grated cheese on this dish over here, you're a total loser. You know, so this is nothing new. Folks, whatever pleases your palate, you know, you have carte blanche to use. If you don't want to put the cheese on, don't. If you want to add a little bit, you know, I like it with the crab. There are a lot of crab dishes that use cheese, as we know.
Exactly.
You know, I think it's kind of a happy compromise. But I thought it was funny that you brought that up because it's like, hey, this is not something new.
Well, what is incredible, but again, we're talking American palate. I've been owning a restaurant in this country for, you know, the last 20 years now. And one of the things you find out about, even if someone tells you don't offer cheese because of that, whether I was just starting in the business or whatever, people want cheese. Now, the key is finding the cheese that works best with it. And the pecorino romano that you're doing, or you know, in my case, I like the ricotta salata, those work well with it. It's finding the items that work well. And if you like it, that's great. If you're a traditionalist and you can't have it, or you think it's sacrilegious, you know, I won't give it to you. But if I'm like you, eat it the way you want to, but find the stuff that works the best with it. You don't want to put mozzarella into this thing and then just destroy this gorgeous dish. You need something that has a little bit of a salty bite to it and a little bit of acidity on the back end that really kind of cuts through all the food. And you nailed it, bro. That's a beautiful dish, and I'm excited.
Thank you. and it's something that's a little bit light. And one of the other things that I put in there to highlight the sort of the coming of spring, if you will, is asparagus. Because fresh asparagus that I can get locally at a market, to me, always means, you know, spring is here, or spring's just around the corner. And often at those times, too, you can always get the fresh herbs are coming in as well. I always recommend, you know, folks, another great thing that you can do is just keep some fresh herbs growing in your windowsill, you know, by your sink, wherever. Keep them in a little pot. Clip some when you need it. And then if you have an abundance, your basil's really blooming, you know, take a page from Chef Luca's book and go ahead and make some basil oil. You know, and that will keep for a while. And so nothing goes to waste. It's very economical. But if you have another favorite springtime vegetable that, you know, you wanted to incorporate here, you know, I think that'd be perfectly acceptable. In fact, that's really what you should be doing. And get the crab locally, too. You know, I happened to make this dish while I was visiting out on the West Coast. So I used Dungeness crab. It would have a whole different flavor for you on the East Coast, maybe with some blue crab or lobster even, right? Would you use lobster in this dish?
Well, this would be a great dish to use some lobster in. Lobster would go perfect with this. And my question to you, it's so cool that you answered, was, you know, what kind of crab would you suggest? And that's perfect. That's the way to do it, is find what's closest to you. So the travel times last, you're something that's in season and that's there. But I would love this same dish with lobster in it and close to Maine. And when we get lobster season going, this would be a home run.
When is lobster season? When is that in the Northeast?
We'll start seeing lobster come in more frequently now. Last year was a tough year because it was so cold in the winter. They couldn't go out at all. So you could get lobster all year round, but you'll start seeing it and the price is dropping and you'll have it available starting in the next month or so and going right through to the fall. We're going to have lobster around for a while. And when it, with the year we've had and how nice it's been, we're just going to have a lot. You'll be amazed at what the Northeast is going to put out with lobster.
Oh, that sounds great. And then again, that works with the seasons and the seasonality. And you bring up a great point that I know we speak of it a lot, but it's important for folks to get into the habit of seasonality, because that's going to really positively impact your economics. When you're buying these quality foods and they're in season, the prices drop, and they can drop dramatically. So you can get all these vegetables at a farmer's market, at your fishmonger. You can get, you know, whatever they're having an excess of. Luca, I'm gonna hold you to that. I want you to send me a picture of my recipe on your menu, and
I
can't wait
till
we do this again. Thanks again. Again, that's Culinary CPR. Hey, head over to cardiochef.com to make sure that you can get your newsletter in time for our episodes when we talk about it each week.